What up, family? It's your man, Hugh Holland, and you are now rocking with the most in-depth show in hip-hop.
Yo, what's good, y'all? It's your boy, BRM.
Hey, yo, this is D-Rock.
What's good? This is your boy, Intellect.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is Mitch Durrell.
What's good, everybody? This your boy, TC, and you rocking with the Bookkeeper, 24-7 podcast, whose hand's always on that plow. So keep it tuned in, because we in the field, man, changing the culture for God. Let's go.
TBK247.com. Welcome to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast with my husband and your host, Daryl Kemp. Thank you, as well as our new listeners, for joining us. On this podcast, we interview artists that we feel should be on everyone's radar and discuss not just music, but their testimony, musical influences, and other topics throughout our culture. On the 16th episode, Daryl chops it up with Christian hip-hop artist Mitch Durrell. This is an episode that you just don't want to miss as they discuss black parenting, racism, and anxiety in black households. Also, Mitch discussed the state of Christian hip-hop while explaining why he invited Dayton on the Mitch Durrell show after a disagreement. Last but not least, they discuss his latest project, Rap Should Be Fun, Volume 2. This interview is packed with testimony, and we hope it bless your ears as it did ours. Without any further delay, let's go.
Yo, this is Mitch Durrell. Check out my song Rich in Spirit on my newest project, Rap Should Be Fun, Volume 2. Then stay tuned for my in-depth interview with the Bookkeeper 24-7 podcast.
So she was like, do you make a lot of money? And I was like, no, I am extremely broke. But I am rich in spirit, though.
While it empty, but I'm rich in spirit, I can't be a fraud. You got money in your pocket, but it don't compare to God. Funding low, but still I got the sun and ghost. They running close and bread don't matter in the bread of life, the leader of the squad. I make music and living off, it's one of my goals. Royalties close to zero like they yell gnats in holes. As a rapper, I'm supposed to say that I'm balling, counting stacks. The only time I'm balling is when I check my Wells Fargo app. Collecting deposits and knowledge from God, so I know that I'm wealthy. No, I'm not rich, but I'm blessed with a job that be paying. I'm clothed and I'm healthy. Cash don't matter, storing treasures up with Christ. I'll be eating at the top, that's a different type of life. Wallet empty, but I'm rich in spirit, I can't be a fraud. You got money in your pocket, but it don't compare to God. Funding low, but still I got the sun and ghost. They running close and bread don't matter in the bread of life, the leader of the squad. Think you dope? Throwing hundreds off a boat. Summer broke, they go diving in that water with no float. Love of money that can lead to evil, that's what Paul had wrote. But don't waste it if you got it, help the poor and give them hope. Ain't it ironic I fly with the spirit and know that I'm rich? I'd rather be right with God and be poor and I never would switch. I just opened up my wallet, ain't find nothing but receipts. But my debt's been paid by Christ and I know it wasn't cheap. Wallet empty, but I'm rich in spirit, I can't be a fraud. You got money in your pocket, but it don't compare to God. Funding low, but still I got the sun and ghost. They running close and bread don't matter in the bread of life, the leader of the...
Welcome to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast, but we don't want nothing on the book. We getting in the book, the Lamb's Book of Life, that is. Follow us as we follow him as we navigate through this world, changing the culture for God through media. I want to give a special shout out to my wife for that excellent intro. and my partner Get 'Em J for the intro music. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the podcast, family. And without further delay, I want to welcome Mitch Darrell to the ride. What up, what's up, and what it do, Mitch?
What's up, man? How you doing? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Man, no problem. And I really appreciate you being here. Yes, sir. So, man, let's take it back to the beginning. Tell us where you're from.
I am from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Man, what's it like living and growing up in Charlotte, North Carolina?
You know, it's funny because, like, technically I always have to explain when I say that because I didn't grow up in the city. I grew up, Charlotte's like a huge area, so I grew up in the suburbs outside of the city, but spent a lot of time in the city. So going to games, going to church was in the city, doctor, dentist appointments, everything like we did was in the city, but we lived out in the suburbs. But it's really interesting because it's like, it's got all different types of areas. Like there's really great areas of Charlotte. There's really terrible areas of Charlotte. Of course, we lived in the suburbs. So it's interesting. It was a popular place for people to move to in like the early 2000s and still now. So you meet all different types of people from all over the place. But I loved it there.
That'll work. So are you a North Carolina fan or a Duke fan?
Neither. That's funny. I dislike them both. I'm an NC State fan. I don't mind Duke. I actually technically work for Duke. Chapel Hill, I don't like them whatsoever. But people assume that because it's like the most notable team out here, but I'm not a Chapel Hill fan.
Yeah, so did you grow up in a two-parent household?
Yes, sir. I was blessed.
Amen. So do you think that benefited you by having both of your parents in your life?
Mm-hmm. It's funny, as I get older, I realize how small of a percentage, like there's not a lot of people that grew up like me, whereas two Black parents who both had already gone to college, they met in college, two parents who I feel like were meant for each other. They don't really fight, yell at each other. I've never can imagine that. Like they really were great for each other and great parents. And so when I got even a little bit older and went to other people's houses and met other people, of course, a lot of people are divorced. A lot of parents are together, but you can tell they don't want to be. I've even seen like domestic disputes between like friends' parents. So it's like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, man, like I might have when I was younger been annoyed that I got grounded or that my parents cared about my homework. But like, I really was in like the small percentage of people who had parents that loved each other and loved me.
Amen. That's what's up. So give us a funny story of Mitch getting in trouble as a child.
It was like a million of them. When I was in like elementary school, my parents thought I was going to be a bad kid because I had this issue with like taking things that weren't mine. Like, and not necessarily that I thought I was I wasn't trying to be a thief or whatever. It's like, oh, there's candy. It's not mine, but I want it. So let me just take it. Or like, so I think there was a time that there was like this class that was using gumdrops for like, it's supposed to be for like art projects or something. And I of course saw them and was like, I want them. So I ended up eating a bunch of them and of course got caught. And my mom worked at the elementary school I went to. So of course she was told and I got grounded and it was just like, why did you do that? Like we could have just got gumdrops for like somewhere else, like at the dollar store or something. But yeah, that's one of many. So I got in trouble a lot as a younger kid.
All right. So let me ask you this now. All right. So you grew up with both parents. Mm-hmm. I just heard you mention your grandparents. Mm-hmm. You were raised in the church, which I already know. Mm-hmm. So let's bust the myth about Black rappers. You mean to tell me you weren't a thug and you didn't sell dope?
No, man. It's funny. I always thought that's what you had to be a rapper until I found some rappers down the road. Chance the Rapper being an example. But I was like, oh, well, you know, you got to come from not even necessarily be a thug or like a bad person, but like you got to come from nothing or like have a story like that or else you're like fake and no one wants to hear a rapper who grew up in the suburbs with two Black parents who cared about him and went to college. But then, of course, I got older and realized that there's all different types of lanes. A lot of people who relate to the music that's not that, and you don't have to, you know, you can be yourself. You don't have to, I don't ever have to act like I used to sell drugs or that I came from anything other than the suburbs, because there's a lane for people like me, who grew up like me.
Absolutely. One of the things I see you address on your platforms is racial issues. Have you ever experienced racism personally?
It's like a tough question, because I feel like people, when you think of that, they're like, well, has a white person ever come up to you and like called you the N-word or like done something that you know for a fact was racist? I haven't had that exact thing happen, but I've had things said to or about me that are very explicitly racist, like maybe, you know, that I'm one of the good ones, or like, you know, I'm shocked that he's not this way, or an example was, there was a girl I wanted to date in high school who was white, and her parents were very racist, but they didn't mind if we were friends. So one of the parents said something like, oh, he'd be perfect for you if he wasn't black. Like, that's in a very explicitly racist thing.
Wow.
And then there's like the kind of microaggression stuff where it's like subtle stuff that even that person might not think they're racist or know it's racist, but it comes off that way. Like, for example, I really like old school. I like Frank Sinatra. I actually just got a new record player for my girlfriend. I got a Frank Sinatra record and I play it all day at my desk. And I work at a cancer center, so there's patients coming up to my desk all day. And this older white woman was like, what are you listening to? And I was like, oh, Frank Sinatra. And she was like, really? I was like, yeah. And she was like, you just don't seem like the type. So that's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if she's racist, but in her mind, she has made up her mind, like, someone that looks like you, there's no way you'd be listening to that type of music. You should be listening to this. So yes, in two different ways, I would say I've dealt with racism, both explicitly and kind of like under the radar type stuff.
Yeah, and you know me, we hooked up a while ago, and I appreciate you speaking out on topics like that. As you know, you're all over our website, YouTube, and everything like that, which we'll get into that a little later. But how has speaking out on racism impacted you as an artist?
I think it kind of is part of why I became an artist. Like, so I was a big Kendrick Lamar fan, and specifically the time I wanted to start making music was around the time he came out with To Pimp a Butterfly. And that album is like riddled with, or full of, you know, fighting racism and talking about those types of topics. And I remember being like, it was something I used to talk on a lot. I do like lives and, you know, videos and stuff. And when I wanted to start making music, I was like, okay, well, aside from God, that was already going to be a part of my music, I could make songs that kind of do the same thing, that kind of like expound upon racial issues. So I'm not always having to just talk at a camera. And I feel like I still do try to do that, but I kind of try to maybe, it takes a lot out of me, I'll say, to do that. So I kind of try to pace myself and like take breaks maybe. But I definitely feel like they almost go hand in hand, where it's like, while I didn't go through a lot of hardship growing up, one thing me and everyone who looks like me can relate to is racial stuff that we've been through and heard other people go through and seen other people go through. So it's always something that I can kind of address and feel like I have a talent of kind of conveying the Black perspective in a way to people who might not have any idea about it.
Absolutely. That would lead me to ask you this. Do you think the way you speak on racial issues, listen to me, affects your fan influence as well as your following?
Yeah, because it's funny, it's a good question. I feel like the fact that, like, perfect example, before I was putting it that much in music, I don't even know if I was an artist at this point, but there was somebody, I think it might have been the Trayvon Martin thing or some, it was some police killing. It's sad that there's so many of them, I can't remember. But I was on Facebook and I had wrote this post kind of talking about it and saying it was wrong and everything. And there was a man, this white man who followed me, who was a family friend, and he commented how he disagreed and how, I think he came from a police or military background, And I remember we had a back and forth that went on for days, and like people joined in. It went on for like a week. And I got multiple messages, but one in particular of somebody who was like, hey, like, it was an acquaintance. And she was like, I just want to let you know, like, I thought it was so amazing the way you were able to like compose yourself during that conversation, like, and not start cussing at him or not like scream or say stuff that a lot of people probably would have. You like kept your composure the whole time, really got your point across, and it kind of makes you look better in the end. And, you know, you did your very best to get your point across. And I remember not really thinking about that being the way I handled things. That's just kind of the way I was taught to kind of talk to people, is even if you disagree, like, it's not going to help if you start yelling. It's not really going to, if anything, they're going to think they're even more right about you. So I feel like the fact that I'm typically able to keep my composure and really speak in a way that I feel like I'm trying to level with that person and be like, look at it from this perspective, instead of saying like, you're stupid or I hate you. I feel like it really speaks to people that might even not necessarily agree with me or like understand me at first, but like they want to understand because they don't feel like they're being attacked. They feel like they're being taught. And so I feel like I have people who specifically have followed me because of that. They've been like, oh, you speak on this topic in a way that you don't seem angry, even though, you know, you probably should be. It comes across more like a lesson instead of, I'm going to scream this until you believe what I believe, which never works.
Yeah, and that's awesome, because we need, the conversation needs to go on, and we need to learn how, people need to learn how to put on our shoes as well as us putting on their shoes.
Right.
You know, so the conversation needs to go on. Is there a conflict of being a Christian first over a black man in this society first?
That was one of the first things I ever made music about, was how it was like, well, they say if I'm black, I have to be a Democrat, and but if I'm a Christian, I have to be Republican. And like, how do those two mix? And like, how am I supposed to focus on black issues, but also people will be like, oh, we'll just pray about it, it'll go away, or like, don't worry about it, because God doesn't see colors, so we shouldn't. Like, it is definitely a conflict. I try not to fall into the trap of kind of going all the way to like identifying as just black and not a Christian, you know, because I feel like it can be very easy. You get very passionate, but you'll start to accept things that aren't Christian. For example, we had talked about in 2020 about the looting versus rioting versus protesting thing. And I was kind of like fine lines between, I can do a protest, and while the black part of me might feel like, oh, it's okay to like loot a store that doesn't support us, that's not in line with the Christian part of me. So It's, while I don't think it's hard in some regards to kind of be like, okay, this is right, this is wrong, you really got to focus on like, okay, I want what's best for people, my people, people that look like me, but I also ultimately want everybody to go to heaven. I just feel like racism is sin. So it kind of is easy in that regard, to where it's like, I don't want you to be racist because it affects me, but I also don't want you to be racist because it affects you, and God doesn't want people to be racist. So they kind of go hand in hand. It's just very easy to forget about the God part and just be like, oh, black people are better, or we should stay away from white people, or we shouldn't even, you know, it's a slippery slope. So to answer your question, yeah.
Yeah, I believe we all have that battle within us. You just reminded me of something before we go to break. Mm-hmm. I remember the interview with 520 Collective, Eric Bossman, over there about a year ago, maybe, I can't remember, but you did go to a peaceful protest. What was that like?
It was really interesting. My mother is very, I mean, she, like I said, she loves me a ton. So she was not excited about me going, just because, I mean, it was that time, if you remember, was crazy. Like, people were obviously getting attacked and maced and I think dying at protests. So I understood, but I made sure that I was going to go to one that was peaceful. It was by the college I went to, and I went with a friend, this white woman friend of mine, and it was interesting. I think at first it's like, maybe you're a little anxious because you're like, I don't know what this is, but like, it's a lot of people. It was encouraging to see how many people, especially how many, you know, white people were out there, but it's kind of like, we're in a line kind of marching around the core of the city, you know, chanting. We sat down in front of the, what was it, the governor's house at one point, I think, and just kind of spoke about what we wanted to see change and, you know, why this was important. And then, of course, it got a little scarier because I think back then it was, there's curfew at like 7 or 8 or something. So right around that time is when you see like the police and like National Guard and like just gearing up for like the people who were going to stay later, which I was not going to stay later. There wasn't a point to. It was really interesting. I felt a kind of a sense of pride in that, you know, I feel like I was doing somewhat my part. And just cool to see how many other people like agreed with the cause, but also scary to see like, you know, this is what it's come to. Like it's 2000 and it was 2020 at the time. And this is still happening. So I was glad I went. I definitely was, you know, something I tell my kids and grandkids about.
Amen. Well, you are listening to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast with our special guest, Mitch Darrell. Stay tuned as we will be back after these messages.
Today is a great day to start your own podcast. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message you want to share with the world, or just think it would be fun to have your own talk show, podcasting is an easy, inexpensive, and fun way to expand your reach online. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more within minutes of finishing your recording. If you want to upgrade, Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help you find the right equipment at the right price. Also, if you would like to receive a $20 gift card from Amazon, follow the link in the show notes and sign up for a paid plan. This will notify Buzzsprout that we sent you and you'll receive more details. This will definitely help support our show. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters who's already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Let's create something great together.
Welcome back to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast, family, where we are sitting down and chopping it up with Mitch Darrell. As we move into this segue, I love to hear a testimony, and so do our listeners. Can you please share your testimony with us of how you came to Christ?
I always, every time I'm asked that, I'm always like, not conflicted, but like, I feel sad, because, not sad, but so most, because I, you know, I interview people and their stories are always so much better than mine. Like, I feel like ultimately what matters is how you, you know, that you got there, not necessarily how per se. But so I think you mentioned earlier, so I was born in the church. I like to say that I was going to church before I was born because my parents found the church we went to in Charlotte through my whole really life while my mom was pregnant with me. It was Charlotte Church of Christ. So I literally grew up going to church, which is, I'd probably say, a good and bad thing. But what happens when you grow up going to church is that it can become much more of like a checklist, like a chore type thing, instead of you knowing the importance of it. You just know as a kid, well, this is what we do. On Sunday, we go to church. There's some kids I like that go there. There's class, there's singing, which is fine. And you are getting like the education and like the fundamentals and everything. But when you get older, like I did when I was probably in late middle school, early high school, you have to really have like a sit down and be like, okay, why do I believe this stuff aside from I just always have gone here? And like, what does this mean for my life? What is like my personal relationship with God, not my parents kind of being like the surrogate of like, you're coming with us because we believe this. And it was actually kind of tough. So like I always was a creative in the sense that like when you're really young, you don't really have to pay attention in church. You're just wanting the time to go by for like the adult service. You pass the time by like drawing or writing. I was always doing one of those things. So as I got a little bit older, maybe like preteen age where I should have been paying more attention, I was still kind of writing poems or stories or like not fully paying attention to the sermons. And there were other kids my age that I had grown up going to the church with who were getting baptized and starting to be a part of service. And so I remember my dad is the most loving person ever. I don't believe he was part of the church until after he met my mother. But, you know, it was like very serious. It was one of those things where like, I used to joke with my, not joke, I was actually serious as a kid. I used to say, I don't like dad very much on Sundays because Sunday morning he's up early. He's very stern. He's ready for service. We have to get there on time. And then Sunday afternoon, the Panthers play and we were not good. So he was not happy at all on Sundays. All that to say, he took it very seriously. So there was one service where I probably wasn't paying as much attention as I should have. And my dad has a way of, he's not a yeller. He can get stern. And when he's saying things in a certain way, it can come off almost worse than like if someone's yelling at you, like it comes off like kind of like the I'm disappointed in you type of thing. So he had said, he was saying, listen, like you need to be paying more attention. Like this is important. It's about time. That basically like stuff that I needed to hear probably, but I just, you know, I almost took it as if I was being screamed at. So I remember like, I was probably like 12 or 13 at this point in time, maybe a little older. I might have been like 14. But I remember I like cried. I like walked out of the building and I like cried and like I went and sat behind the building and I was just crying. My dad had to eventually come find me and like hug me and brought me to the car. And he kind of apologized because I don't think he expected that to happen. But crazy enough, like a lot of things in my life, I feel like that was something I needed because then I really was like, let me sit and really analyze and think like, why do I go to church? Do I believe this? Why have I not been baptized yet? Because Church of Christ, what we believe is that, you know, all you really need to believe is that Christ is the Son of God and he died for your sins and that you want to go to heaven. Like this is, you want to start following him, you want to give your life to him. So you get baptized and that's kind of the start of your journey. And at that point I knew I believed those things. I just, for whatever reason, hadn't been following through. So probably 2 weeks after that, after really sitting with myself, I had decided I was going to get baptized and this is what I wanted my life to be. And I remember my dad baptized me. He cried, but I remember he specifically wanted to ask me like, was this your decision? Like he wanted to make sure he wasn't like, he didn't scare me into doing it, which he did not, but I get why he asked that. And like I said, that was probably at age 14. Started being a part of the service. Later, years later, my dad became a deacon, which only kind of motivated me more to kind of be better. Moved out to Raleigh, started going to church out here, and that's probably the story. I think it's a nice story, and I feel like it's a good example to tell other people because a lot of people grow up in the church, and it's just like, I grew up in the church, and that's it. And it's like, that's right. I don't even know if I believe it. I just go.
Yeah, what I like about this, see, this is why I love doing these interviews, because, man, first of all, let's give a shout out to your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
You know, I love that. I love, and let's bust all these myths down about the black household, too. I mean, your parents love God. You said you was practically born in the church before you was born in the church.
Yep.
You know, this is not scriptural. This is something that the parents have taking the initiative to show their child who they serve. And I was actually listening to a sermon one time by Charles Stanley. And Charles Stanley said that the first image of God that a child gets is his parent.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
You know, and then you formed your own personal relationship with God. Your parents' relationship with God strengthened, especially when your dad stepped up to the plate to become a deacon, because that's a lot,
yeah.
You know, and it helped motivate you to curb some of your ways of doing like, hey, I got to do better. Look at my dad. So, man, shout out to your parents, man. Real talk. Yes, sir. On your self-entitled album, Mr. Rail, in 2020, you had a song called Stuck. You talked about depression and the medicine the doctor put you on. How is your mental health going now, fam?
it is much better. So I'm someone who, once I find something that works for me, not necessarily even medicine, but just like anything, I am like quick to recommend it to the next person. So like, I never thought I really had anxiety issues until I found out I definitely did. The doctor suggested medicine. I was like, you know, medicine helps when you're sick with other stuff, so why not try this? Found a medicine that worked for me, and almost immediately, I mean, it took a little bit, but like very quickly, I noticed the symptoms and stuff I was going through going away. And so a lot of people's fear is like, I don't want to be on this medication for the rest of my life, which I get that. I wasn't necessarily in that boat, but I get why people say that. They don't want to rely on something. But, you know, after I've probably been on it for 6 years, so after about five years, I decided I was going to try to cut down the dose I was on. So now I'm officially taking half of the initial dose I was taking. And I'm comfortable doing that. And, you know, maybe someday I'll be like, let me try to stop taking it all together and we'll see how it goes from there. And if I need it, I got it. But it definitely, you know, I'm a person who, it's funny because both in church and in the Black household, mental health is a thing that just doesn't come up a lot. Like, I don't even think it was something that, I know some Black families are against it, but others I just think don't know. Like, it's not something you knew. It was kind of like, oh, you're stressed, everyone's stressed. You're anxious, everyone gets anxious. Just go to sleep. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not something you'd really think, like, people have been through much worse. Like, you'll be okay. And when you realize it's actually like a mental chemical thing and that there's something that could help that, just like medication helps with the flu or a cold, it's like, okay, well, why not take this and take it for as long as I need it? If it helps, if I need to try a different kind, if I need to try more or less, it's, you know, it's different for everybody, but I definitely want people to know it's an option because a lot of people don't know it's an option. And it's like, if it can make your life better, the way I thought about it is like, if I just have to take this little pill in the morning for the rest of my life to not go through how I used to feel, that's fine with me. I do that with allergies. I take an allergy pill every day. I'm fine taking that allergy pill every day, so I'm not sneezing. So it's definitely much better, and I'm like a huge advocate for people trying medication.
Amen. Can you share with the family about one special DM you received for that song alone?
One in particular or just any?
The one, you know, I'm benefited because I'm in a group chat with a lot of you young men. Mm-hmm. But one of the listener of the song DM'd you about how that song helped them.
It's funny. See, the reason I'm confused is because I think there's a couple people that have done that. I'm trying to think if there was one, because I have was Stuck Part 2 as well. But I'll say it this way. There have been multiple people who have told me that song has resonated with them because they went through the exact same thing. Because like Stuck Part 1, the whole tune of the story was like, I felt like I was going like through something physically, like something was physically wrong with me. So I started seeing a lot of specialists. I got a sleep study done, I had countless physicals, I had all this stuff done, not even thinking that anxiety was an option. Like that never crossed my mind. So when I finally saw my main doctor, and I was running off the list of things that were wrong and what was happening, and when he was like, I think you might have anxiety, like that kind of caught me by surprise, because I was like, I never had thought about that. And then, you know, he kind of started explaining what anxiety can feel like, because like I said, it feels very physical. It feels like, oh, well, it's not in my head. It's something like this actually hurts. Like stuff's actually happening in my body or chest or such and such. He suggested medicine and it ended up being that. So yeah, I've definitely gotten multiple people that have reached out and been like, yo, like this song is exactly like what I've been going through. And I've, you know, I've had people ask about, do you suggest medicine? How do you go about getting medicine? Is it something you can ever stop? Just all those types of questions. And I feel like, you know, I'm not glad that people are going through that stuff, but I'm glad that it even helped a person or two, because that was one of those songs that I got discouraged when I released it, because it's not like a super catchy song or like a song you're going to put on repeat on a playlist. So it doesn't have that many streams, part one or two. So I remember kind of feeling like, man, like this song's not doing that well. You know, maybe I shouldn't have put it out. But then anybody saying that it has helped them at all, it's kind of like, well, if this song was able to save somebody, I feel like that's way more than enough, you know, to call a song successful.
Amen. If you could talk to that person right now that's on the fence of accepting Christ and God's will for their life, what advice would you give them?
Well, one thing, and I feel like this is something we shouldn't say alone, but I feel like it makes sense to me. If you're on the fence when people are like, how can it hurt you, basically? So like, if you're, let's say you're on the fence, you don't know what you're going to do. The way we explain it is like, well, what if God is real? What if all this is real, right? What if this is what it is, and you had decided not to follow it for whatever reason? You've lost everything, really. But what if he's not real? What if, you know, your fear is, oh, well, I don't want to waste my time. Like, what if it's not real? Then what does it hurt? You were a good person. I mean, because that's the thing about Christianity. Like, obviously, there's some things you are expected to do. But there's, for the most part, if you follow exactly how Christ wants you to be, it's just going to end up you being a good person and probably finding more joy, because I feel like that's something people don't think about. Like, while Christianity doesn't make your life easier per se, it helps you to find actual happiness and like joy in life.
Amen.
And a perfect example of that is like all the time we talk about celebrities who are like, oh, they've made it, they've got all this money. You don't, most of them are unhappy. Like Kanye is a billionaire. Right. He is miserable. I feel so bad for him. He's like, he's been trying on the path to like find Christ and then keeps stumbling, which is expected when you find Christ in your 40s. But it's like, he's not happy and he's got all the money. He's got everything. Robin Williams is an example. Funny dude, super successful, rich, committed suicide. So it's like, not only will you be a better person, be set for going into heaven, but while you're here, you can actually find actual joy that's sustainable instead of trying to chase like some high or some form of happiness that's not. We have proof of people who have gotten the things you want and are not happy at all. So I would say, what can it hurt? It can only help everything. And if you
if you
say no to it, it can only make everything worse, both physically and spiritually.
That's right. Amen. You are listening to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast with our special guest, Mr. Rail. Stay locked in as we'll be back after these messages.
Hey guys, listen up. Check out this discussion with Desi Yates from episode 15, only on the Bookkeeper 247 podcast.
I said, but I want to do it to show people that you can come out. And I let them know that. So they kind of left it alone there. They were strongly advising me not to talk about that. So next day when I get up on stage and I'm actually in front of Nigel and Jason Derulo and Paula Abdul, they asked the questions. They was like, you know, we see that you were depressed and all that. And I just shared my testimony on stage. And I just was real brief. I was like, hey, you know, this is why I was sexually abused.
Hey, yo, what's up? This is Dej P. And you listen to Bookkeepers 24/7 podcast. And if you don't know, now you know.
Welcome back to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast, family, where we are sitting down and chopping it up with independent Christian hip-hop artist Mitch Derrell. As we move into this segue, I'd like to hear about some of your thoughts on our space we share in this Christian hip-hop community. Barely being on TikTok, I still couldn't help but notice a whole lot of Christian rappers who are Christians but don't associate with our CHH community. And a lot of these Christian rappers on TikTok are killing the algorithm game. Why do you think they disassociate themselves from our CHH community?
Honestly, it's like, I'll say it's the community has some blame is the way I word it. So it'd be one thing if somebody saw Christian hip hop and was like, maybe they saw a ceiling. Maybe they were like, I can only be so successful over here. So while I want to be a Christian artist, I still want to market to the masses because I want to reach more people. That makes sense. Unfortunately, what it is more often than not is it's not, oh, I see a cap over there. Maybe it is that, but it's also, I don't want to be around those people. Those people are constantly fighting, bickering about something, judging each other. The fans are fickle. The fans will assume you're not a Christian, will attack you in your day. I only have a little bit of what I call success in Christian hip hop. When I look at people like Lecrae, who consistently is, you know, being called the Antichrist and not a Christian and doing a poor job and being criticized, it makes you want to like think about, is this something I want to be in? Like, I know for a fact I could not be in his shoes, constantly having my every word kind of like looked under a magnifying glass and flipped. Absolutely. And just people assuming all these things. Like, it doesn't confuse me when I see people who are like, I don't think I really want to be in Christian hip hop, because that's the thing. Like, you don't have to be in Christian hip hop to be a Christian, a professing Christian who's an artist. That's the thing. And in some ways, I almost envy artists who are like, I'm trying to think of, like, NF maybe is an example, but like the artists who are like, oh, they're very open about being a Christian. They try to get more mainstream appeal. And it's not necessarily that they don't seem to be against Christian hip hop. It's just they don't want to subject themselves to that audience of people who are like, it's like they expect a very specific thing. It's like, as much as I love my guy, it's like, if you're not KJ52 and have super kid friendly, no really adult themed stuff, music, then you're not a real Christian, or you're this, that, and the other. So, you know, there's probably a mix of things. There's the people that think, oh, well, there's more of an audience outside of Christian hip hop, so I'm going to go that way. But I really think we don't help when we kind of like tear ourselves down. Like, we're such a small niche, yet we seem to like keep trying to make ourselves lower for some reason. Like, we keep trying to, we build like sort of a foundation and then we tear it down. And it's unfortunate. You know, I consider myself CHH. I don't really see myself leaving. I kind of want to make it better for the artists that come after me. But it doesn't confuse me at all when there are people who are like, nah, like I'm going to do my thing over here. And like, you know, I'll be cool with some of y'all over there, but I don't really want to put myself in that torture.
Man, that's what's up. Man, did you read my question, Mitch, before I even asked it to you?
No, I'm just, I love it.
Yeah, that leads me into when you just said you want to leave it better for the next CHH artist. I know you like what the veteran Christian hip hop, in my eyes, legend, Thizzle put out on his Twitter feed about CHH. One of the things he said, and I'm paraphrasing, is a lot of the younger CHH artists like to call him OG until he gives them some advice about how they should be moving. Do you or do you not think as a whole that the younger CHH artist doesn't listen to the veteran CHH artist? If so, why and why not?
As a whole, it's tough. I feel like, I mean, in general, people don't like to be told what to do. And younger people, I was thinking about this today, younger people don't love listening to older people until, and it's funny because then they get older and then they realize these kids aren't listening to me. He's like, well, I didn't listen to older people when I was younger. So I don't know. I think it kind of depends. Like, I feel like it's hard to tell someone who's finding a lot of success in the way they're doing things to change, because they're finding a lot of success in the way they're doing it. Whereas I think there's a lot of, at least the young guys I associate with, like the people in the TLS chat, like we're like waiting for the veterans in Christian hip hop to tell us things and to let us know things. It's just the stuff that kind of seems like, how do I explain it? It's the way you come across. So like there was the whole situation with me before I knew him very well, the me and Dayton like 2 years ago, where I was doing like this fun diss track thing, and he saw it without context and was kind of like, this is against, you know, what Christian hip hop is for. And like, this is, and he came across kind of like a grumpy old man. without fully knowing what was happening. That's one of the situations where it's like, we can feel like, since we're younger, we're a little more in touch and like have a little more fun, and older people saying what to do can kind of come across as like, well, we don't want you to have any fun. But as far as like actual like information and like sharing how, you know, tips to kind of get through the industry and what to and not do, I feel like there's at least a good percentage of us that are like waiting for that. I think it's more of the problem is we feel like we don't get that much. So whenever we do, it's like someone who actually seems to care about the younger generation is like Selah at the corner is a good example. It's like, I don't know. I think it's the way you kind of approach it. It's going to be tough to just say, you don't do this or do this, or you're finding success in this, but don't do this. And really get through, because younger people are stubborn by nature. So
I promise you, Mitch, we've known each other for years, and I promise you, you just stole these questions. So lead.
I did not.
So lead it with that answer. One of the most courageous things I've seen you do is after having a misunderstanding with Dayton from God over money, you invited him on the Mitch Darrell show. How do you feel about diss tracks now, even though it was fun and games for you then?
It's funny. I feel like, so maybe I could have done a better job in that specific situation of making it clear it was a joke. I thought I did that, but it did teach me just about how the internet works and how people are going to kind of form their own. You could have, I mean, I thought I made it super duper clear that this was a joke. I think I even said in parentheses, like, this is a joke. This is not real. But as far as like joking and fun stuff, I'm always for that. As far as real diss tracks, I see why Dayton was mad before getting the context. Cause like we've gone through the real diss track thing as well over the last like year. And that's different, right? Because it's weird to do that in Christian hip hop where you're actually, when you actually, how do I explain it? I think there's a right and wrong way to do it. The wrong way is to kind of insult or take jabs at people you don't really know and like, you know, have it come off serious and kind of just be mean, because that's not, you know, Christians are not supposed to be mean. The way I've heard it could be acceptable is maybe you have a misunderstanding or a problem with like a brother and you try to maybe go to them, you know, in private and speak to them about it, and it hasn't worked out, or you haven't gotten a response or something, then maybe I feel like it's not wrong to put it in a song. But even with that, you got to be careful. I feel like you can't embellish. You kind of got to say what happened. You can let emotions out, but I feel like you can't start calling them names or like be how like mainstream and secular hip hop would do. A diss track, because then you're running into the line of being mean and not really for no correction or anything, just trying to tear somebody else down. So, you know, all fun stuff. I'm always for fun. But anything where you're actually tearing somebody down is, I can't really see how it would fit in Christian hip hop.
That's right. Once again, this is the Bookkeeper 247 podcast with your host, Daryl Kemp. We are sitting down with an exclusive interview with Christian hip-hop artist Mitch Darrell. Stay tuned, and we'll be back after these messages.
Hey, family. I hope you're enjoying the show. In order to change the culture for God through media, we have plenty of opportunities for you to grow with us. Do you need production for your podcast or YouTube video? Look no further. We got you. Do you want to do album reviews? Start your own podcast? Write your own devotionals? Look no further. We got you. Do you want to report Christian news from hip-hop to book reviews, as well as related topics in our culture? Look no further. We got you. By partnering with us, we can do all these things for the glory of God. Email us at TheBookkeeper247@gmail.com, and let's start making strides to influence the culture from a godly perspective. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Bookkeeper 247 podcast, family. where we are sitting down and having an engaging conversation with independent Christian hip hop artist Mitch Darrell. In this segue, I like to talk about your latest project, Rap Should Be Fun, Volume 2. On Rap Should Be Fun, Volume 2, you have some of the hottest upcoming Christian hip-hop artists like Q-Flo, Alcott, DJ, LC, Prodi the Prodigal, Chris Noel, Monster, Tavar, Mike Wise, Outer City, The Satellite Kids, Scribe Music, Q, Raw B, Red Tips, Untitled, and Just Call Me DT. You also incorporated some of the vets like Dre Murray, which you know is one of my personal favorites.
Right.
K-Drama, Dylan Chase, Drew Bex, and Selah the Corner. In the media news outlet, The Cruise Hip Hop Corner. What is your creative process like when putting together a project with so many different artists?
It takes patience. I was just explaining to my girlfriend about how after Darrell, I think I told myself I wanted to take a break from putting out so much music because that album took a while. And then I was starting to go through a time period where I was like, I don't even know if I want to keep doing this. Like, this isn't fun, of course. And then I was like, I was going to make a concerted effort to make fun songs. And then I came up with the idea for Raps Would Be Fun 1. And I was like, one of the things I have the most fun with in music is doing songs with other people. Friends, people I haven't met before, collabing with people is like the most fun thing ever to me. So on that one, it was less people, but it was a lot of people on that first project. But it took like a year to get it all together because it takes a long time to do a project that's just me. Darrell was just me and a couple features. And that's me getting the money together, getting, the beats, writing everything, rapping everything, getting it all finished, everything. It takes a long time for just me. I was explaining yesterday how putting together Raps Should Be Fun 2 took basically a full year because I'm having to plan everything and then decide who I want on the projects. You're then at the mercy of another person's schedule by being like, hey, I want you on this song, but take your time. I don't want to rush you. So it could take a month to get that verse back. And then of course I got to get it all together. And then when you have multiple people on a song, you got to make sure everyone's happy with the song. And some of these songs have 4 and 5 and 6 people on them. So it's kind of like, the way I think of it is like putting together a puzzle, because it's never like binary. Like, it's never just this step, then this step, then this step. It's like, let me get this beat and then get this verse on here. And then later I'll get the artwork from this person. And then I'll start working on this other track. And then I'll waiting on this verse. Like, it all gets pieced together at the very end. But the in-between is just a ton of piecing together and patience and changing things and waiting. To where at the end it's worth it, but it takes so much time that I have told myself I cannot, if I'm gonna do a Raps Should Be Fun Part 3 or like anything that type of project wise, I need to wait until at least like 2023 or something, and just maybe work on songs that are just for myself, because it's definitely draining. It's great to be able to get so many people together, but it takes a lot.
I could understand that. One of my favorite moments of the album is the diss track skit with Mike Wise. Mm-hmm. Man, that's so hilarious. And we know Mike Wise. We know how funny he is. But my favorite tracks is Warzone with Scribe Music and Dre Murray. Also Masterclass, Cypher with Q-Flo, Pride of the Prodigal, Outer City International Show, and Weeze the Satellite Kid. I might as well add Babel with Drew Bex, Alcott, and Dylan Chase, and Big Shot with Just Call Me DT. And lately, I cannot get that Klondike song out my brain. I'm like, I'm on the way home from work or going to work. I cannot get it out my brain, right? What's your favorite track on your album?
That's tough. It's probably Chop It Up Part 3, but that's just because I'm so proud of like that saga of songs, and they're some of my, it's like one of my favorite type of songs to do, and I've always been a speed rap fan, and that's why I even started making these types of tracks. And so I always loved how each each other fast rapper I get, it's kind of, it's fast, but it's different, and they have their own like unique thing. So that's probably my favorite. And then second favorite is probably, I really like Autopsy with Say La, because that song wasn't even supposed to be on the project. That was supposed to be the start of me making solo songs after Raps Be Fun 1. But, and I'd only done one verse. I think I might have wrote a second, but I had one verse, and then Say La was starting to reach out to some of us younger guys, and he was like, hey, if you need a verse, like, hit me up. And I was like, okay, I'm working on this song, and you can, that's, I'll scrap the second verse, you can be on it. It ended up being one of my favorite songs, and I like that it's like the first song on there. But I'd say Chop It Up Part 3 is definitely up there, and then probably Autopsy.
Man, that's what's up. With that many fire artists on your album, does that put pressure on your pen game?
Actually, you would think so, but not really. So the way I think about it is I kind of already know what I bring, and I know I'm always going to be the best version of what I do. So perfect example is like, I'm on a song with Dylan Chase and Alcott, and that's Babel. And both of them are really, really good rappers, but they rap differently than me. They're both very syllable oriented flow, which I, you know, I try to focus on those things as well. But my thing is much more wordplay, what I'm saying, and like punchline stuff. So even though their verses are different than mine, and they're great verses, I'd never listen to it and think, man, I got outdone, out-rapped, because I feel like I'm doing, you know, my best. I feel like it probably keeps me to not mail in a verse or whatever. But the only verse that I will listen back to and be like, man, the other artist was better, is probably Warzone with Dre Murray. Because I didn't really know at the time, he wasn't really putting out stuff. And I remember I had joked, I was saying that I kept trying to bring him out of retirement to write this verse, because it took him a little while to get it back to me. And so when I heard it, I was like, I think I even told the group chat, I was like, this verse is amazing. Like, I feel like, because we had done a song before, but I was kind of a younger artist and the song wasn't great. And I thought his verse was good. But this time I was like, I still really like my verse, but I think I might like his better on Warzone. Other than that,
yeah, I can't think. Man, that's what's up. Dre Murray probably was grinding them coffee beans.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what I told him.
Hey, I know some of the artists on your album made the Rapzilla Freshman List. And some of the other artists is in a group Q-Flow form called the Listening Session. This is a two-part question. What's the best advice one of them have given you? And has it helped you as an artist or personal?
I feel like Scribe always gives some of the best advice, just about knowing what your purpose is and not getting, because it's very, very easy to get discouraged as an artist. Like, it happens to everyone at least like once a year, at the very minimum once a year, to where you're like, why am I doing this? I'm not as successful as such and such. Is this really worth it? I'm not making a lot of money, et cetera, et cetera. But just kind of, he has said multiple times, like, remember, like, you know, you got God on your side, and this is, we have a purpose, and there's, you know, you don't have to be rich and famous for you to be fulfilling a purpose. So I feel like that has been one of the main things. And then just kind of believing in like the talents God gave you, and kind of like knowing, I feel like the group chat has helped me to be much less competitive. Like, I talked about the on the skit, the best, about how that was a big part of Raps to Be Fun too, was I was like doing all these contests, feeling like I had to do them and I have to be the best. But I wasn't even having fun. I was just stressing about the results of these contests, getting upset if I didn't win. And it's like, even though I had some great verses, you know, I should just be proud that I'm able to even compete, or that I even have the fact that I can even record. So it's one of those things where it's like, if I'm the best Mitch Durrell and no one else is me, I don't need to get a, you know, super overly competitive. It's still fun to be, have friendly competition and stuff, but if I'm so focused on the competition that I'm not even having fun at what I'm doing, and I'll only be happy if I win something, then it's like, what's the point of this? So probably both those things, and I'm pretty sure both of those things came from Scribe at some point.
Hey, man, yeah, Scribe do give that good advice. I don't comment a lot anymore, but I had to cut them notifications off because y'all be at it. But Scribe do give good advice. What can the listener get out of Rap Should Be Fun, Volume 2?
One that songs with a lot of different artists on them are, it's possible to do that and have them be good songs. Because I feel like a lot of times you see a lot of names on there, but maybe the song isn't great. But I like to try to bring out the best in everybody who's on there. But the main thing is in the title. That rap should be fun. It is funny because I tweeted a few weeks ago. I was like, the reason it's called Rap Should Be Fun is because people make it not fun. The reason it's not Rap Is Fun is because the whole reason I came up with it is because I noticed there's a lot of things that surround the music that are outside of the music that are making it not fun to do. Whether it's yourself, whether it's ego, whether it's competitiveness, whether it's trying to make a list that you're being upset you didn't make some list, whether it's thinking you're not allowed to make a certain type of song because people won't like it or think it's lame or corny or something. All of that is not important. Basically, it's the whole reason most of us ever picked up Mike was because it was something that we thought was fun. Like I talked about getting to go to the studio, because whenever I first started, I had somebody, a mentor, who was paying for studio time, and it felt like I felt like a kid in a candy store. Like I was so happy when it was recording studio, when it was studio day, because it was just the most fun I had. I used to record myself on Facebook Live, just recording. It was my favorite thing to do, and so I don't want to forget that now that I have a way to record on my own. And you know, sometimes it's a chore to record, and I'll be like, oh, I have to record. I gotta remind myself I'm not paying $60 an hour to record myself anymore, and I actually have some people who listen to me. So it's like you have to be able to keep the fun in it, or else you'll become miserable. And then there's no point in doing music if you're not having fun doing it, or if you're feeling like you're only doing it to please other people. That song Klondike, I remember I got the beat, and I'll hear a beat in 2 seconds and know that this is something I need. I remember hearing it and being like, nah, I have to, this has to be on Rap Should Be Fun too. And I just remember once I came up with the concept and everything, I was like, there are going to be people that don't like this song. People are going to be like, why did you do this song? This is lame. But I'm like, I genuinely, wholeheartedly love this song. This song is amazing to me. So even when people hit me up and be like, oh yeah, I don't really like that Klondike song, or it's not really my type of song, I'm like, which is fine. You can have your, you know, your preferences and opinions. But that song was fun for me to make, and I'll, you know, I'm probably going to make more of the songs that other people might not like, but are fun for me to make.
I was still a skip from the album. What the crew say? I don't think that's going to work, Mitch.
I love that. It's funny because I wrote the script for them to do with that skit, but I was afraid that people were going to be like, wait, was this real? Was this an episode that the crew was like, I tried to make it so bizarre that it would be like, oh, this is they're joking. But I think someone didn't get it. I think they were like, man, the crew was so mean to you. I was like, I wrote that for them. I wrote every word for them to say, because it's so absurd to be like, there can't be any fun in that hip hop thing. But I love those guys.
I heard you in the interview with Cody Free that as of this time of this interview, it hasn't been released yet. You said that although you like doing Rap Should Be Fun projects, they are nowhere near your best music yet or what you'd like to be making in the future. What vision or what kind of project does Mitch Darrell see himself making in the foreseeable future?
It's tough because and we also talked about in the interview, people just don't listen to bodies of work anymore. And I hate that so much. Unless you're super, super famous, it's really hard to do that. So it's hard. Darrell is probably the closest thing to the type of project I like making a lot. It's a story. It's a body of work. There's still skits in it. They're part of the story. You kind of learn something by the end. But that project didn't stream very well. One, because I was a little bit newer. And two, because there wasn't a lot of songs on there that you play a lot in rotation, and some other reasons. I wasn't the best at promoting and artwork and everything. But even still, if I released a project similar to that now, I know it wouldn't do as well as the Rap Should Be Fun projects. So I don't know how long down the line I'll be able to make the type of stuff I really want to make, but it's very it'll sound very similar to like some of Kendrick's stuff. Like I still, To Pimp a Butterfly is probably the project that made me start rapping. And that project's very jazzy and very musical and almost not hip hop. Honestly, it's like a solid mix of hip hop and jazz, or it's like its own genre. But like only two of the songs on there are very like replayable songs, maybe two or three. And so it's tough. It's tough to make something that is very much like a piece of art, but also have it be super successful unless you're already successful. So I don't know exactly where I'm going to go. I know I'm going to take a break from Rap Should Be Fun. I'm going to try to work more on stuff that's just me or maybe one feature, but not, you know, three and four people on a song for a while. But honestly, right now I'm trying to take an actual break because I haven't done that since I started in 2017. So.
Yeah, and that's what's up. And I think we all need the break. And speaking of breaks, we will be back for our last segue after these messages.
Yes, sir. You already know what's going on, man. Say, man, shine on me, soul of the city. I'm locked in to the bookkeeper 24/7. We in there. It's up there and it's stuck there. You hear me?
All right, welcome back to the Bookkeeper 247 Podcast, family, where we are sitting down and chopping it up with Mr. Rail. As we move into this last segue, I'd like to ask, if I'm a fan, why would I follow Mr. Rail?
I feel like I'm unique. I feel like I kind of, I don't even know how to explain it. I just get told that a lot. Like, you're different than other artists. I feel like I kind of touch a lot of subjects. I feel like outside of the music, I feel like I'm funny and entertaining person. Twitter is one of the main ways I've gained a type of following. And I was joking yesterday with my girlfriend, actually, that I used to have people who would follow me for months and they'd be like, wait, you make music? I was just following you because you're funny or like fun to follow. Like, I didn't even know you made music. I'm gonna listen to your music. So I feel like that's important, because then it's like people fall in love way less with music than they do artists and the people for who they are, and that that person's music, because they like that person. And I feel like I'm a likable, entertaining person. I try to be personable. I'll touch all types of topics. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's up. Now, look, you just said this a few times and I had it wrote down. So I got to bust the momentum by saying this. All you single ladies, Mitch Darrell has a girlfriend. Hey, I was on IG On Beat Music Critique Friday.
Yeah,
when you tuned in one night, right?
And, yeah,
yeah, man. So that single life is over for all.
Yeah,
of you.
I remember that. That's
single ladies shooting that Mitch Darrell. Mitch Darrell has a girlfriend.
That's hilarious.
Oh man, everyone that follow us know by now that we partnered up to create the Mr. Rail Show.
Yes, sir.
What's one of your favorite moments with the show so far?
I gotta think about that, because there's a lot. I really liked interviewing Dayton and kind of coming full circle about that situation. I really liked, what was one of my favorite ones? I had interviewed, I might have to go look and see who some of the ones were, because there was one, the Selah interview was really good.
Mm-hmm.
The ones where I forget that it's even an interview, like Loso, that, you know, yeah. What, the Loso one might have been my favorite, because I got to talk to him about, I'm such a big battle rap fan, so it was like talking about Christian and Christian hip hop, but then also talked to him about battle rap and like kind of nerd out with an actual battle rapper. So that was probably up there. The ones where I get to talk to people who I'm already close with are pretty good, like Alcott. I can talk That's to him right. for hours. I remember the one I was one of the more nervous ones was the Danielle Apicella one, just because she's a bigger artist. But I think that one went well. I got a lot of them. I really like all of them. But the ones where I end up forgetting that I'm even interviewing somebody are probably my favorites, and then that Loso one was definitely cool.
Yeah, I think the funniest one was, well, it's two of them, but you and Chris Noel,
oh, yeah,
and you and Jay Crumb, man, I laughed at that whole interview, right?
Yeah, that one was funny.
Yeah, So as we wrap up this interview, fam, what's next for Mitch Darrell?
Mitch is going to – I'm really going to challenge myself to do more visual stuff. I have a lot of music out now that I can do music videos or little snippets and visual stuff with. And then actually getting myself to take a creative break from at least making a project, because like I said, that takes like almost a full year. So maybe kind of just living more life to write about, trying to do little small things. Like I'll still do features and I'll still do interviews and I'll still try to work on visual stuff. But other than that, I'm trying to kind of lay lower and spend a little less time doing music stuff.
Through the grapevine, and man, my partner would kill me if I didn't ask this, but through the grapevine, I heard you have a song coming out with Get 'Em Jay. How's that going?
What's actually funny is, so we've already got, I probably got three songs with him that are already out over the last few years. That's and then he hit me up for a feature a while ago, and I did that for him. And he hit me up for another one months ago, already paid me, and has not said another word about it. I don't know. I don't know what he's waiting on, but yeah, I'm over here writing, but he has not sent me anything to write to. Or if he has, he hasn't followed up. But yeah, I love Get 'Em Jay. And yeah, we've got almost too many songs together.
Yeah, y'all fit too. I was talking to him earlier today. I said, anything you want me to ask Mitch? And he told me, ask him about the feature we got coming up. But yeah, disclosure, he's moving, trying to get settled in. He's working on a few things for us too. So, man, it's all good. Man, last thing, but not least, let the people know where they can follow you at and cop your music.
You can find me everywhere. It's at Mitch Darrell. Actually, it's at Mitch Darrell on Instagram. And it's at Mitch Darrell _ on Twitter. Somebody else has at Mitch Darrell. And then YouTube, just type in Mitch Darrell. And my music is everywhere. Apple, Spotify, YouTube. I've been uploading everything on YouTube now. Mitch Darrell. And you can reach me on any of those platforms because I live on social media.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll have it in the show links. And before we get out of here, Mitch, man, I just want to personally thank you for coming on the show. Man, thanks, we've created a partnership, but more, we've created a godly friendship. And I really do consider you one of my brothers. I love what you're doing. Stay encouraged. I pray for you and your ministry and your family. And I pray that God just keeps blessing you.
Appreciate that, bro. I appreciate you as well.
Man, no problem. And everybody, you all know where you can find us at. Go to your favorite web browser and just put in hashtag TBK247, and I guarantee we'll pop up everywhere. We out.
Thank you for joining us. Remember, you can help us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, AudioMac, and many more platforms. If you would like to donate a monetary blessing, go to the description located inside the show notes. There, you will have an opportunity to give a one-time blessing or monthly if you choose. Basically, whatever the Lord puts on your heart to give will be very much appreciated. The donations will help our ministry help others, as well as our growth regarding better equipment, so that we can spread the word of God even further. Thank you again, and until next time, God bless, God bless, God bless, God bless.